Welcome to a Finance Basics podcast. This is Larry Schrenk, and today we are discussing financial diversification. Most people who have heard anything about investments have been given the advice that you're supposed to have a diversified portfolio. But what does that mean? What is diversification, and why does it work? There is a cliche that often goes with this discussion: don't put all your eggs in one basket. So I think I'll start talking about eggs. Imagine you produce eggs and put them in that one proverbial basket to get them to market. The day is hot, your hand is sweaty, you drop the basket and all your eggs are lost. The next day, to improve your situation, you take two baskets, one in each hand, and divide your eggs evenly between them. This time you're walking down the road with both baskets, trip in a pothole, and again, all your eggs are lost. The third day, ever seeking to improve your business strategy, you gather friends, give them two baskets each, and divide the eggs evenly between all the baskets. On today's journey, there is an earthquake, and all the eggs are yet again lost. What do you do the next day? Well, there's no way you could possibly divide the eggs among people that would be a successful earthquake strategy. So what you do is exactly what you did the day before. You give each friend two baskets each, and you divide the eggs between them. You console yourself, however, with the knowledge that earthquakes are not very frequent. With your current strategy, most of your eggs will make it to the market most of the time, since most days are earthquakeless, and only a few eggs each day will fall prey to potholes and sweaty hands. The moral of my little fable is twofold. First, diversification does not entirely eliminate risk. But second, it does help overcome certain types of risk. When we are faced with isolated independent risks, diversification is effective. But when there is some overpowering risk, such as my example of an earthquake, diversification can't help. Now, I assume that stocks interest you more than eggs. But before we get on to finance, I need to correct a bias that entered into my story about eggs. In that story, all the risks were bad. That is, if anything unexpected happened, you were likely to lose at least a few eggs. But when we talk about risk in the wider sense, we need to be more sophisticated. For there to be risk, it must be possible for what we expect to happen not to happen. Risk is the possibility of a deviation from our expectation. The outcome could be either better or worse than what we expect. Our eggs were only exposed to risks that could hurt the business, what we call downside risk. In the case of stocks, by contrast, there's the possibility of either a better or worse outcome than expected. If I expected the stock to return 10%, the actual return may be 12% or it might be 8%. That is, it could be either better or worse than expected. Stocks are exposed to both upside and downside risk. When we examine diversification as a tool for lowering risk, we mean risk in this broad sense that involves both an upside and a downside. Okay, on to stocks. Imagine that you hold one share in an oil company. I cannot even begin to list the number and types of risk to which you are exposed. Consider the possibility of changes in the price or the supply of oil, something of which we all have first-hand experience. Consider technological changes that might decrease the cost of alternative fuel sources. What would happen if cold fusion became a reality? What would happen even if cold fusion became a real possibility? Further, consider changes in the demand for oil. Increased demand for oil in emerging economies is one of the explanations for the recent increase in the price of oil. Well, what about changes in government policy, regulation, taxation, etc.? The share price of an oil firm is exposed to a myriad of different risks. Now, add a second stock to your portfolio and start with a stock that is generally unrelated to the oil market. Invest in a public company that owns a chain of grocery stores. If I had only invested in the grocery store stock, I'd be in the same situation as with the oil stock. Perhaps the price would be a bit less volatile, but I would still be exposed to all the risks associated with that business. Supply price changes, shifts in consumer demand, consumer preferences, labor problems, spoilage, etc., etc. By putting these two stocks together in one portfolio, I begin to experience the effects of diversification. The random occurrences that have an impact on the oil company are somewhat different from the random occurrences that have an impact on the grocery store chain. Sometimes bad things happen to both. Sometimes good things happen to both. But if these are random effects, many times a good result for the oil company will be offset by a bad one for the grocery store chain, and vice versa. This cancellation is what we mean by diversification. Even if I had selected as my second share another oil company, I would still see the effects of diversification, though they would not be nearly as great. If my portfolio consisted in shares of two different oil companies, I would expect them to move together to some extent, because the value of both responds similarly to many outside effects, at least much more similarly than would an oil company and a grocery store. But the two companies might also have different responses to other factors. For example, one might receive its oil from Nigeria, the other from Venezuela. Political disruption in one country may hurt the company receiving that oil, but may well help, by limiting general overall supply, the value of the other company. In general, the more dissimilar the production activities of the two firms, the more we're likely to see cancellation of risks and the effects of diversification. I do need to introduce a statistical term, but as I promised, I'll do it for the moment without any mathematics. The term is called correlation. This is a statistical measure of how closely two number series move together. In our case, how closely do the changes of the two stocks mirror each other? To say that two stocks are correlated, or positively correlated, is to say that when one goes up, the other generally goes up, and vice versa. To say they are negatively correlated is to say that they generally move in opposite directions. Correlation is what can be called a measure of co-movement. So now, I can make the earlier discussion a bit more precise by saying that I would expect the stock returns of two oil companies to be highly correlated, while the returns of the grocery store and the one oil company to be less highly correlated. I expect greater diversification when two stocks are less correlated with each other. For reasons we shall get into in a minute, most stocks are in fact positively correlated. That is, they generally do move together. Well, if I have two stocks in my portfolio, there's no reason to stop with those. I can add a third and a fourth and a fifth. If I were willing to invest in a mutual fund at a very low cost and at a very low level investment, I could get instantaneous diversification across perhaps thousands of different stocks. In the modern world, a well-diversified portfolio is available to every investor. As I add more stocks to my portfolio, I get greater cancellation and I experience a greater degree of diversification. If you perform this experiment, you might, however, be surprised by the final result. As you add more and more stocks, the volatility of your portfolio goes down and down, but you never reach a level anywhere near zero. What's stopping you? Okay, back to eggs for a moment. So far, we have discussed the financial analogs of the slippery hands and the potholes of our egg example. But what in the financial world corresponds to something like the egg earthquake? Remember that the point of the earthquake example was that some risks were so vast and all-encompassing that diversification did not provide any protection. The company-level risks we've talked about, for example, labor problems, input price changes, and technology innovations, are very much like the potholes that confront the individual egg carriers. But not all financial risks are so restricted in their scope. Instead, there are financial risks that have an impact on the economy and the market as a whole. For the moment, let's restrict our discussion to the domestic economy, but at the end of this podcast, we'll expand it to ask what happens when we consider international investing. Well, to find a financial risk that works like an earthquake, we don't have to recall the celebrated financial catastrophe such as the stock market crashes of 29 or 87. Quite a number of factors can have a ubiquitous effect on stocks, that is, on the stock market in general. If, for example, the government were to double the corporate tax rate, there would be an immediate economy-wise impact, most likely a significant loss, on the stock market as a whole, and by implication, on almost all the businesses in the economy. We can also suggest other, less dramatic, macroeconomic factors. For example, inflation, exchange rate fluctuations, that would have a similarly wide effect on the value of stocks. If we hold a well-diversified portfolio of domestic stocks, we are still completely exposed to these macroeconomic risks. Such risks are the earthquakes of financial markets. They are the pervasive risks against which diversification has no effect. As we have discussed, diversification can be an effective tool in limiting the risks to which individual firms or even some individual industries are exposed. But diversification, at least across the domestic market, has little effect against risks that have uniform results across the economy as a whole. Our well-diversified portfolio will still fluctuate up and down. It will still have volatility and risk created by these broad risks, which are called market risks. Even though we have, through diversification, limited our exposure to the individual risks to specific firms, which are normally called company or idiosyncratic risk. Now, it'd be very nice if we could eliminate all these problems by moving up to an international scale. That is, if we were to incorporate international, not just domestic assets in our portfolio. Fortunately, this strategy may help with that situation, but is by no means able to eradicate it. We have been unable to eliminate risk in our domestic portfolio because of the so-called market risks that have a domestic economy-wide impact on the market. There is a global correlate to our domestic problem. That is, there are global market cycles and forces, and there is a correlation between various domestic stock markets that seems to be growing stronger. So to introduce international investing is to take the entire analysis and move it up a level, in which we are concerned with global instead of domestic macroeconomic factors. Further, the world market is not as integrated as the domestic market. While global financial markets have opened up in truly radical ways over the past 20 years, there nonetheless remain significant barriers, for example, ownership regulations, financial transparency issues, etc. And these costs must be balanced against any gains achieved through international diversification. We might very well include international assets in the portfolio as a way of furthering diversification and lowering volatility. But we cannot be naive and expect that this expansion will eliminate the risk and volatility of even an internationally well-diversified portfolio. I hope you've enjoyed my Finance Basic Podcasts.